I see this lady. Are you from here? ¿Eres de aquí?
I'm from Los Angeles.
From Los Angeles.
Yes.
Now, did you see this in the news and come over? Did
yes.
you get word? You know, what is it that makes you so upset about it right now? We've seen a lot of these raids, but I noticed you earlier. You seemed really particularly upset about this. Well, talk to me.
Yeah, I'm upset because this is outrageous. This is fascism. You know, this is an American Hitler. They have no, the Marines, the National Guard has no right to be kidnapping human beings who have done nothing wrong. You know, these are not criminals. The real criminals are in the White House. And we have to come together from our many different perspectives to demand that Trump must go now.
You know, one of the things that they are saying, DHSS, is that they're here, the warrant, from what we're understanding, and I'm still trying to confirm, is for the owner, because the owner has been hiring hundreds of undocumented immigrants, and that is what they're going after, you know, and that is wrong, that they're going to start going after that, and that's what they're standing by. What do you say to that? Because there are those people out there who say, hey, that is illegal.
Yeah, I mean, well, look, we're all illegals. If they come for one of us, they come for all of us.
How delightful. This was a protest, I think, in L.A. At least it was coming to us from Fox L.A. But that woman was very well-spoken, wasn't she? It almost sounded like she had studied about this or been trained about this. And she tells us that she's illegal. I don't know if she's being metaphorical or if she really was. And she sounds a lot like a movement called La Raza, which I'll discuss a little bit in this show. But it's a movement that says that America should give California and Texas back to Mexico, that we are, it's a pretty dreadful, it's a Marxist movement. And they've been very powerful at different times. But she sounds a little bit like, the other 349 groups on the left that are protesting and wreaking havoc all over the country. And that's actually what we're going to be talking about today. I think the issue is how big is this group? These groups collectively, how big are they? What kind of a threat are they? And how can we stop them? We're going to be talking to Kyle Scheidler, who's just written an article called The Fight the Radical Left Wants. The Fight the Radical Left Wants, and we're going to discuss that today. But first, well, of course, this is Sandy Rios 24/7, and you know you can call us at 662-821-2040. You can write us at sandy@afr.net. You can listen to the podcast on any podcast platform. And you know what? If you're not a podcaster, you can go to sandyrios.com, and it's very simple to listen to it at that point. So you can catch us on Facebook and Twitter, Instagram, a whole bunch of other social media platforms. So if that's your favorite go-to, then check them out. If you like Telegram, we're there too. But before we proceed today with the discussion of Senator Tim Kaine's a statement, I have to share this with you. Since the Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade in 2022, over 100 abortion clinics have shut down. Listen to that. You know, but here's the heartbreaking part. Now the abortion pill has taken their place. It's being pushed on women everywhere, and it now makes up more than 60% of all abortions. But there really is hope. Every single day, preborn is rescuing lives, about 200 babies every day, by simply loving their moms and showing them their child through an ultrasound. And when a mom sees her baby and hears the heartbeat, everything changes. And here's where you come in. Just $28 provides that ultrasound. Think about it. Less than the cost of dinner out, and you're literally giving a mom and her baby a chance at life and a chance to meet Jesus, which is really finding life in the deepest sense. So I'm asking you personally, will you join me in this? If you just go to preborn.com/Sandy, that's preborn.com/Sandy, it's $28 to provide one ultrasound to one girl to save one baby. So any multiple of that is welcome, and I think most people can afford to give something. Thank goodness the economy is a little bit better right now. So if you can do something to help these kids, I know you want to, just go to preborn.com/Sandy. All right, this is an interesting one. So you might want to take a piece of paper and a pencil. You also might want to download and print out The Fight the Radical Left Wants for discussion with your friends and family, maybe, because this is a great discussion with Kyle Scheidler on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness. That we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice. What's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up. Speak up. Say something. Do something.
Protesters nationwide are fighting back against Republicans' plans for redistricting. Dozens of protests were scheduled to take place across 34 states and what organizers are calling the Fight the Trump Takeover on Saturday.
How we draw districts has consequences. Time and time again, congressional districts in Texas have determined the quality of life for the most vulnerable.
One of the largest protests is taking place in Austin, Texas, where state Republicans there are planning to redraw their districts to give the GOP 5 additional seats for next year's midterm elections.
We are in a fight for safe democracy, not only in Texas, not only in the United States, but for the whole entire world.
And it's not only in Texas. Republicans in Missouri and Florida are also hinting at redistricting in their states as well. Still, some GOP lawmakers don't support the move.
Trump must go now!
And in Washington, a separate set of protesters are marching to the White House, demanding, quote, no military occupation of our cities, following announcements from President Trump that he would activate National Guard troops in D.C. to reduce crime. On Friday, Democrats in California released their own proposal for a new congressional map to counteract efforts in Texas. In New York, CB Cotton, Fox News.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. And today, you've noticed there are protests around the country. I think you do. And it doesn't have to be about redistricting. It doesn't have to be about the National Guard. It can be just about anything. They change their placards and they march under another banner. And so what are they doing? You know, what is their end game and can it be controlled? Because it actually has been frightening as we watch Seattle and Portland and we watched what they do in Washington, D.C. I remember when Justice Kavanaugh was being, when he's having the hearings and they were just like animals convening on the Supreme Court, climbing up the doors. What are they wanting? What do they want? And is there an end game? Is somebody paying for this? What is their goal? Well, my next guest probably knows about as much about this as anyone. Kyle Scheidler is the director and senior analyst for Homeland Security and Counterterrorism at the Center for Security Policy. And he's just written a book called The Fight, an article called The Fight the Radical Left Wants. And he joins us today. Kyle, hi, and thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me, Sandy.
You know, Kyle, I've known you a long time, but I don't know the answer to this. You've been following this stuff a lot. You've been my guest before. You're so knowledgeable, but I really don't know. What's your background on all of this?
Well, I have been studying extremist movements and organizations really my entire adult life. I went to college and studied the politics and literature of totalitarian society, focusing on communist movements and Nazi movements. And then, of course, with the advent of the global war on terror, the Islamic movement, Islamist organizations like the Muslim Brotherhood. So I'm a longtime student in how totalitarian ideologies organize, mobilize people, utilize people to achieve their aims. That's the stuff that really gets me up in the morning.
Yeah, no, I sort of agree with you. I mean, this is not my one focus, but it has been my focus for years, Kyle, because I was in... I grew up during communism, and I've been to every communist country besides Cuba, and I've experienced the totalitarianism, whether it's North Korea or China, interviewing people that are with the underground church, and just the oppression, just keenly aware, because in my generation, communism was a terrible threat, and everybody understood it. But people have forgotten now, and so it's time to parse this. We're seeing this on our streets, and now we have to regain an understanding. So we talk about the radical left, but I want to just a few basic things. How would you define the radical left?
Well, I think of the left largely as an ecosystem. So you have a variety of ideologies, everything from the very progressive, which is an inherently American ideology about the way government should function, that government should be run by bureaucrats, that we see rising out of the 1920s with Woodrow Wilson and FDR and so on, which is a very American but left approach. That would be sort of your more towards the center left. And then you have increasingly far, what would be called far left ideologies, ranging from your traditional Marxist-Leninist to your Marxist-Leninist-Maoists, all the way to your autonomous Marxists or your anarchists, people who legitimately want to overthrow the government and replace it with nothing. They all, for the most part, on the left, they share some view based on Marxism, whether it's a traditional Marxism or it's a cultural Marxism of the kind promoted by guys like Herbert Marcuse and Gramsci. Yeah. But in all cases, it's about overthrowing the system and replacing it with a Marxist system.
So this is really not new, you know, to this country. We Herbert Hoover, the FBI was formed out of fighting communism in the, I believe, the 30s, maybe the late 20s. But still, now we're seeing a lot more uprisings, Kyle, that we've never seen before. When I think of Seattle, I think of Portland, Antifa, Black Lives Matter. Then we have the Black Bloc. We're going to get into these different things, but it's become, you can see their fingerprint. They're sticking their heads up. They're becoming more bold. So is there any way to quantify how big you think this movement might be?
Well, they very successfully move in and among mass movements, single-issue voters. So they try to mobilize large blocks of people and then manipulate those blocks to achieve their objectives. So, you know, it's difficult to say, you know, in a Black Lives Matter crowd, like back in 2020, how many of those people are just emotionally motivated by something they saw on Twitter or something they believe to be true that may not even actually be factually true, and how many of those people are professional organizers, professional revolutionaries who exist to rile up those people and manipulate those people. So it's a generally based on organizing principles, the left has the ability to manipulate and mobilize large blocks of people for relatively short periods of time, typically. But they're able to do that because they have this core organizing network of people that are trained to act in this way. And so that core is relatively small, but they're able to take advantage of larger groups of people.
You know, we saw this in the 60s. I mean, that's exactly what was happening. You had communists infiltrating the youth riots, the anti-nuclear, the anti-Vietnam War, and it was just a handful of people, you know, motivating the crowd, and the kids were, you know, it made sense. We don't want nuclear weapons. We want to stop nuclear war. The war, Vietnam War, we were filled with what the left's narrative was about it. That's what the news media was delivering, like they do now. And so that's what we had then. But, you know, the whole issue of organizing, Kyle, I consider that I know quite a bit about communism and how it started and its methods and all of that. But I don't recall ever hearing, just because I don't recall it, about organizing people. I remember hearing that term when I read Mao's autobiography or when I read about Lenin and Stalin in Russia. I don't remember hearing them actually talk about organizing people. Is that a principle of communism that I've somehow looked over?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a principle of the left that the way that I see it, the left really views power as being a metric of people plus, or really people times organization. So this comes out of typically the use of unions, the infiltration and use of unions to organize people. But they spend a lot of time thinking about how do you organize and manipulate mass movements of people. This is really fundamental to the way that they operate. And it's a challenge for us in a republic because we think of power as being derived from the people elect their officials. Those officials direct the government with various policies that the people asked for. And that's where we think power comes from. We think essentially that power comes from the law, right? We ask, we look at President Trump and we say, can he legally do whatever policy he wants to enact? And we have the Supreme Court and the legislature and so on. That's the way we think about the use of power. That's not the way the radical left thinks about power. They think about power as the use of people to achieve political objectives. And so they do that by organizing people and creating pressure points. Sometimes that is very direct pressure when they, you know, put a protest outside of somebody's office or outside of somebody's home, as they did in the case of the Supreme Court justices that you referred to. Right. That is sort of a direct pressure. It's a kind of intimidation, but it's not. It's a form of street politics, and that is increasingly the direction that the left has moved in the United States. They're less and less interested in whether a given issue will win them the election, and they're more and more interested in how they can use organization to force their policies to be enacted. And they, you know, the one that they typically cite is, you know, their ability to have same-sex marriage passed. It had nothing to do with the general views of the populace. It was generally not popular in terms of, you know, in elected officials. Even, you know, go back to Barack Obama when he was running for president, did not say that he was in favor of it, and they were still able to achieve it based on the way that they used pressure, the way they used pressure in politics, the way they used pressure in culture, and so on. So if we think about ways in which you can achieve your political objectives, we typically think in our mindsets, like I said, our mindset of people who live in a republic as efforts to organize to get people elected who will then implement policies we desire. They don't look at it that way. They look at it as organizing to achieve specific objectives.
Well, I do know that the communists work through trade unions, and even the Chinese. I mean, they use them. I mean, but I've never, I don't remember organizing, but I do remember, you know, when Barack Obama first said he was a community organizer, I knew a lot about him, Kyle. I was in Chicago at the time and on radio there. And I was working also for the Alan Keyes campaign, so we had a lot of background on him. So I knew exactly who he was. But I had never heard a communist refer to themselves as a community organizer. That was a new term to me. So I'm only emphasizing that because when people now listening to me and you hear about organizing and community organizing, that is a buzzword. That means something. It's not an innocent term. It sounds innocent, but it is not. It is a purposeful method, as Kyle was talking about. The other thing I want to ask you about this. Do you not think now that this movement, this radical left movement here in this country is, I don't know if they're there yet or borderline, and that's the use of violence. Do you think they're there yet, or do you think they're moving toward that?
I think that depends on who you talk to on the left. I mean, we have pretty decent polling that suggests that increasingly large swaths of the left are comfortable with the use of violence. There was a poll that came out on whether people thought it was acceptable to assassinate President Trump, for example, and the numbers there were quite alarming. And we're actually seeing among the left a growing split between your sort of Antifa-style anarchists and your traditional mass movement organizers. So this is a split between groups like Antifa and the Party for Socialism and Liberation, for example. And the anarchists and the Antifa types are saying, we need to go to violence. That's the only thing that this regime will understand. We need to go to violence. It's time to stop organizing large-scale protests and go to direct action violence. And the the more doctrinaire Marxist-Leninist Maoist types are saying, no, we can achieve power through mass movement organizing. So that's a bifurcation that we're seeing on the left, and that is a debate that they are having. But the way that the left operates is, even though they have these divisions among themselves, they benefit from the whole spectrum. So when an anarchist goes out and commits an attack, for example, when we had the Antifa group that opened fire on the ICE officers in Texas, the other elements of the left are not held responsible for that violence, but they're able to take advantage of it to push their messaging. And so the groups that commit violence in the streets, that engage in rioting, that engage in these other targeted attacks, you then see other people come in behind them and say, well, this wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for whatever the policy is that the left wants. I mean, we saw this quite explicitly in the attack in Minneapolis with the apparently transgender individual who opened fire on that Catholic church and school. And then, of course, you see people coming out to say, you know, this is, you know, we need to protect trans rights. And also, this is all the fault of the people, you know, who are using their thoughts and prayers instead of passing gun control legislation. Right. So even though they don't take responsibility for the violence, they can take advantage of the violence to push the political messaging. And this is part of what the left calls diversity of tactics,
which means
they tolerate each other's tactics in order to push the movement forward.
Yeah, because they don't really care. They have enough policies, you know, like I remember Phyllis Schlafly used to say to me, this is simplified. Sandy, if they kill babies, they'll do anything. And so my point is they don't value life. And so even if they don't want to do violence, they don't really mind it when it happens. I was thinking of those in Antifa. I remember in Seattle, they killed, I think, an ICE agent at an ICE facility. And they also killed a man on the street. So they have done violence. And I understand, though, you say it's a mix, which is so ironic, Kyle, because, you know, the history of communism in the Soviet Union is that they were not having very good luck turning the people against the Tsar and the White Russians, which were the ruling, the rich people, and as opposed to the peasants. They weren't doing very well. And suddenly Lenin started saying, we got to get violent. And when they got violent, that's when they made progress and were able to, exercise our act out the revolution, and it was successful. But and one more thing, I'm doing all the talking. I just want to mention that the communists used violence in Central and South America to take over, too. Then suddenly they realized they could work through the system. They could run and win elections and then, start owning businesses, taking over banks. And that's kind of the preferred method right now for international communism, isn't it?
Well, I would say it's a mixture. And, on the left, it's all about what they would call the correlation of forces, right, which is the times and the events and whether you are strong or weak. These are things that are going to determine your methods. Methods are not determined by principles, right? They have no principled objection to violence. They use the tactics that are most effective at the time when they're most relevant, right? You mentioned, Barack Obama as an organizer in Chicago, and his mentors were Bernadine Dorn and Bill Ayers.
Yes.
Whether underground terrorists, and, you know, after they were terrorists, what did they do? They went on to be some of the leading thinkers in pedagogy in the United States, meaning the training of teachers. Mm-hmm. And so you're absolutely correct. They build into institutions, they burrow into institutions when that is relevant and when that is useful for them. And some of them engage in violence when that is helpful to their cause. And to the point about the Russian Revolution, this is also in the Russian Revolution, it was also the case that the Leninists used anarchists to conduct a lot of that violence, or they took advantage of a lot of that anarchist violence. And then, of course, when they took power, they liquidated the anarchists. But they were willing to use the violence of that part of the movement, that part of the radical left generally, in order to achieve their objectives.
Well, I'm going to talk about some of the divisions that probably are not common names to people. But before I do that, Kyle, I just wonder, do you think that, for instance, in D.C., where President Trump has ordered the National Guard and has taken over control of the district via statute that's perfectly lawful, legal, do you think that kind of thing is what's needed everywhere? Is there a solution to this that would require, it seems, a very strong government who cracks down on this kind of behavior? Just your thoughts about that.
I think you have to be cautious. There are times when a strong, firm hand are the absolutely best choice, and there are times when, if it appears like an overreaction, or if the radical left is able to achieve a viral moment that makes your people look bad, they can use that to really redouble their efforts. And that's what they're looking for, I think, in these cases. I think they are actually salivating at the idea of President Trump sending the National Guard to Chicago, where they have a lot of influence, and they could very successfully engineer a dramatic incident. It seems like, wisely, the Trump administration is moving away from that to deploying the National Guard in blue cities, but in red states where they have cooperation with the governor and the legislature. That, to me, is a wise decision. They can still operate in places like Chicago, but do it through federal law enforcement, ICE, FBI, DHS, ATF, DEA, et cetera, rather than through the public, that strong public image of individuals, you know, in camouflage that the left will try to exploit. Yeah. But they've been successful in D.C. so far. They seem to understand that they needed to keep a positive imagery. You had the Trump administration pushing out imagery of, like, kids playing on the Humvees with the National Guardsmen and National Guardsmen helping old ladies carry their, carrying their groceries up to their apartments and those kinds of things. So they did seem to understand that there's an element of image here, an element of information warfare, if you will. That's the real game that the left is playing. That's what they want, is they want an imagery that they can exploit. They want to force the Trump administration into a situation where they either overreact and that helps the left's cause, or they underreact. They fail to act, and that also will help the left's cause. The left calls this a dilemma action. You want to force your opponent into taking two choices, neither of which helps his cause.
It's amazing how devious. And of course, the interesting thing, this is very confusing, and yet the tactics really never change. It really is the same, as you pointed out, like in Russia, they're very, very smart, and it's kind of frightening. And one of the things that's frightening about it that people don't understand, and how could they, is that there are so many different groups. And let's talk about that for a second. You mentioned in your article, which, again, the article is called The Fight the Radical Left Wants. And, Kyle, before I go any further, how could they find this article?
It's at The American Mind, and you can also find it on the center's website at centerforsecuritypolicy.org under my name.
Okay. So, and if you just Google, I would think, Kyle Scheidler and The Fight the Radical Left Wants, you could find it. I think, unless Google's censoring it. But so when it comes to these different organizations, you know, I think of the Black Bloc, Indivisible. We got Antifa. We've got the Free DC Project, which is doing a lot of harm in DC. Harriet's Dreams. I want to talk about some of these. But the reason there's so many of them, Kyle, maybe you could explain that instead of me talking. Why do they have so many different groups?
Well, some of this is because they're organized. They're not organized hierarchically. They're not organized from the bottom, from the top down. A lot of people have this misconception of somebody like a George Soros sitting in the middle of a spider's web, pulling strings. But that's actually not true, in the sense that it's much more like people from it's much more a bottom up effort. So you have all these different community organizations that get organized, and they have overlapping structures, overlapping boards. They have relatively small groups that receive funding and fiscal sponsorship from larger groups. You have hardcore abolitionist or anarchist groups that receive their funding and cooperation with from relatively progressive groups. So there really is an interaction and a spectrum that is much more complex than as sort of what people tend to think of as like a, you know, they're not like a corporation or a military organization. It's much more of a nebulous network of various actors who are both competing and cooperating.
You know,
so
I think
you have,
it,
for example, you go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm just going to interject. I think of it sort of like, this is an odd comparison, but Christians will understand this, like Christianity. It's an ideology. It's a faith. It's a belief. We don't all know each other. We don't have, for the most part, we don't have a pope. Even the Catholics have a pope. But, I mean, he doesn't lead all Christians. So we don't have someone telling us what to do, but we have a thing that we believe. So they share principles that they believe in, and that's what they're able to just act out as Christians are, separately in different geographical areas. But there is, what I had in mind, Kyle, was kind of Arabella. That's hard to explain, but it is kind of the umbrella organizing organization that comes up with a million different names, you know, prints posters, creates websites overnight, pop-up groups. Where do you put them in the spectrum of things?
They are one of these, I think of them as a progressive organization. They have ties to Democratic politicians. They engage in politics. They try to get people elected. They're a dark money group, so they're not your traditional 501c4, but they move money in politics, right? So why is it that they move money to these smaller groups, as you say, these pop-up groups? This is where, you know, and some of those people are on the radical left, because that's who knows how to run a protest. That's who knows how to run an organization, who knows how to community organize. So if people at Arabella want to start a protest to or a campaign or a movement to focus on Justice Kavanaugh or focus on D.C. statehood. Right. That's what the Free DC Project is actually about. They will put money out to these community organizers, these community organizations, and those people tend to actually be far more radical than the progressive groups that are funding them. But they fund them because these organizations have this organizing capacity. They have the ability to organize protests. They have the ability to get people in the streets marching. And that is what these larger progressive organizations want, because they're trying to achieve some policy outcome or some policy goal. In most cases, I don't think of those groups. Those groups are not actually revolutionary, I don't think. But what they are trying to do is move the Overton window, right? If your audience is familiar with that term, the Overton window, it means the sort of the area of acceptable political discussion or policy discussion. And so one of the ways in public relations you will move that Overton window is by creating a more radical voice to the right or to the left to say, so for example, in 2020, you had calls for police abolition. And they were funding police abolition calls for literally the disbanding men of the police. And then they backed that off and they said, actually, let's defund the police. And they successfully achieved that in a number of places. But they would not have been able to achieve that had they not first had the more radical call so that defunding seemed like a more moderate option.
Yeah.
So a lot of these progressive organizations will use the radicals in that way in order to achieve their objectives.
Yeah. So I think that's important that you explain that. And the Overton window, basically, it kind of changes our minds too, because we kind of get used to something further and further and further, and then they'll back off, and then we get used to the thing in the middle, which we would never have accepted if they hadn't gone so far out to the left. It needs more conversation than that. But Overton window. But the thing though. George Soros, now you've said that he's not, you know, pulling the strings and all of that, which I believe, because there are more people than him involved in this. But you do consider the George Soros Open Society and the Tide Foundation as radical left groups, don't you? Or am I missing something?
They certainly play a role in this ecosystem, and it is the role of the funder, right? I don't believe that they have full command and control, which means that I don't think that they can reach out and cause a protest to happen or necessarily make a revolutionary group do something or not do something. But what they do is act as a gas pedal. So when they want things to happen, they can push a lot of money into the ecosystem, a little bit like dumping fish food into an aquarium. And all of a sudden, things start to happen. Well, if they don't want things to happen, they want things to calm down, they want things to be quieter, say because they have a Democratic politician like Joe Biden in office and they don't want a lot of disorder, they just pull back on the fish food a little bit, right? The fish are still in the aquarium, the fish are still swimming around, but you don't see them anymore.
Yeah. So that's actually what's been happening. That's what's been happening the last 4 years of Joe Biden. They calmed down. Less fish in the tank. There are groups that you mentioned here I've never heard of before. And one of them is Harriet's Dreams. Harriet's Dreams. What in the world, Kyle? What is that?
Harriet's Dreams is a police abolitionist organization based in D.C. They sort of operate on the Black Lives Matter spectrum. They're D.C.-based organizers, so they're focused primarily on D.C. and D.C.-based issues. But they are radical police abolitionists in their ideology. So they believe in eliminating the police, and they are quite successful in organizing in Washington, D.C. But they're an example of the kind of community-based organization that exists in a lot of these urban centers. That is networked into the larger movement, but they really own their space and they are very successful within their space of D.C.
Let me read. This is something we know that there's training. There's organized training. Someone sent me this direct action training with Blackout Collective. Blackout Collective. That's another group, and it says, "Join Free DC for a day-long direct action training with Blackout Collective. In this session, you'll learn about what it takes to stop business as usual and to take collective action for community empowerment. The training will include interactive role play of protest scenarios." I'm skipping around, but they're actually advertising this, and it happened in August of 2025. They're teaching people how to be violent or how to resist, like methods of protest. Like what? Give us some ideas, Kyle. You know about what people do when they're
trying to... This could include blockading roads and highways. This could include how to organize an illegal, unpermitted march. It could include, in some cases, conducting de-arrest tactics, which is just a polite way of saying assaulting police officers. De-arrest tactics is when they utilize the crowd to assault the police and essentially pull the police off of somebody who is being arrested to prevent them from being arrested. And we are seeing this as an increasing tactic that is used in a variety of protests. And they teach these tactics at some of these trainings. And this is increasingly common to see some of these organizations that have these street protest tactics and capabilities conducting training for what appear to be apparently more moderate groups, right? So you have the Free DC Project, which on the face of it seems to be more policy-oriented, more moderate, but then they're using these other more radical organizations to conduct the training and develop their abilities. So it's, if you again think about that ecosystem where as you go further and further down, closer and closer to the actual street level, you're getting more and more radical in terms of ideology and belief and also willingness to engage in criminal activity.
You know, Kyle, I was just thinking, this goes way back. I think I was on radio in Chicago. That would be the 90s. And there was a group called La Raza and The Race, which wants to take, they claim that America stole California, and they want to violently take it back. They're very radical. And it reminded me of a clip that I found. This is a protest that was taking place in Los Angeles. And I just want to play this for people. This is one of the protesters, and this is clip 7.
You think about the U.S. stole the land from Mexico. They're, you know, why do people come here from all over the world? Because the U.S. messed up their country more than it has done here. These are human beings, you know. Trump and the regime are going after people with no due process, you know, without the rule of law. They're just kidnapping people, and now they're sending them to foreign countries and concentration camps like Alligator Alcatraz, you know, and Guantanamo Bay, South Sudan. Like, when is enough enough? You know, the Trump regime plays victim all the time, and they create lies in order to enforce a fascist program. And you know, it's completely illegitimate what they're doing, what they're claiming.
In the first half of this clip, she admits that she's illegal. I think that's, Kyle, that's an example of a woman who is trained really well. She's very clever. She's a good communicator. And listen to all the things that she said, you know. It's twisted. It's training. It's not just doing violence. It's also just the thought process. Just your comments about that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, she sounds like a first-year political science student in pretty much any college or university in the United States.
True.
That is the ideology, and frankly, that is now being pushed down through K-12 as well. That is the ideology that is promoted in a lot of our public schooling, a lot of our higher education. The fact that it's, you know, factually untrue in every particular. Almost doesn't really enter into it. She is repeating the what the left would call the mass line, the current truth, the phraseology that is appropriate for the current, that has been pushed out for the current current moment, and you can hear that in her voice.
Absolutely. And now here's something. I ask you, we talked at least briefly about how to stop this, and you said there should be caution with using government clampdowns, and I think you're right. But there was going to be violence, and I believe it was right leading up to the election. We were expecting all hell to break loose, actually, and it really didn't, Kyle. Do you know what happened? What something else is at play that actually prevents these people from doing all that they'd like to do? And I don't know exactly what that would be, except if, is it the mood of the people? Have the people changed so much that they don't put up with this? They're not persuaded? Is that having an effect?
Right. Well, think back to when I mentioned the correlation of forces and if they feel that the time is not right for violence, then they won't engage in violence. So what you need is the ability to competently govern, the ability to project confidence. This, I think, is one of the things that the president has done very successfully, is he does project confidence. He projects the fact that this kind of behavior will not be tolerated. But fundamentally, the way that I think about these kinds of challenges is essentially as a kind of insurgency. Because, as I said, they are organized from the bottom up. They are working in every urban center and every location with their various cells and groups. And that means that we need to think in a sort of counterinsurgency mindset, which also says that you need to organize from the bottom up. So the solution to these guys, I think, is actually not federal power and a big handprint from above. It's educating local law enforcement, state law enforcement, getting them on board, getting state legislatures to pass laws that hold these people accountable, keep them in jail when they riot and they commit crimes. And what you will see is in states that are doing that, you don't have these kinds of behavior. And in states where they have political backing and they're able to operate, they run rampant. So that's, you know, that's why in California, anarchist protesters are able to shut down the Golden Gate Bridge for 4 hours. And in Florida, they try to block a highway and they're scraped off the street.
Yes, isn't it lovely? I live in Florida. I'm very happy about that. Yeah, it's real so refreshing when they are just silenced and, you know, stopped from their mischief is kind of too kind. It's always refreshing to see that, Kyle. I want to say, though, I want to remind people that communism has never really succeeded. It just hasn't. For a time, yes, but people actually get their fill of it, and they want to be free. I think, you know, Cuba is still oppressed. Venezuela is now, like, suffering this horrible oppression. The Britons, Kyle, did you see, they're planning a huge rally because it's a little different, but it's still the same. They're just being overwhelmed by radical leftist policies, and they've had it. And so I don't know if a big rally is enough, but they are planning a huge rally because they've just had it. So people just have the will to be free. They don't, even though they're frightened of violence, they can only like take it so long. And I think that history is on our side with this. I don't know if you would agree. I would like to know if you agree. What do you think? What do you think the end game here is going to be?
Well, I will say that, you know, you mentioned that, you know, certainly people on the right tend to think of this concept of organizing as a dirty word, that a community organizer is sort of a negative terminology, and they're right. But as I like to say, if you don't organize your community, somebody will organize it for you. And, you know, you're seeing in places like the UK, where they are dealing with, as you said, I think rightly, oppression, that they are now finding that they need to understand concepts of community organizing, concepts of how do you go out and meet your neighbors and get them to join with you in a political movement? How do you organize a protest and keep it peaceful and safe? You know, all of these things that the left can do so well that we tend to think of it as magic. You know, I get frustrated, frankly, with people on the right who say, you know, who's paying for this? How is this done? And it's like, well, it's done through hard work. The left spends a lot of time and effort and money on people and getting people trained and getting people capable of engaging in politics in this fashion. And in some cases, you know, if they're going to organize your community, you need to be organizing your community too. You need to be educating your local officials. You need to be meeting with and building good relationships with your local law enforcement. You know, if local law enforcement is only ever hearing from the police abolitionist crowd and they're never hearing from the citizens of their town or their county who want more policing and respect the police and want the police to be capable, and they want prosecutors who prosecute crimes, and they want offenders to be kept in jail, not bailed out for, you know, cashless bail. They need to hear that from you, because they are hearing the opposite from the other side constantly. And that, you know, that frustrates us, because that's not really the way we'd like to do politics. Unfortunately, that's the way that the left does politics increasingly. And so you're forced to kind of also participate in that space. And that means learning some lessons from the way that the left operates, but doing it in a peaceful, respectable way.
You know, Kyle, I was just thinking, I love history, and I bet you do too. And I do a lot of reading. And one of the things, of course, that you learn when you read about our history is that the citizens were so highly educated. I think I heard a stat that the Americans around the Revolution were the most literate, educated group in the world for a country. They knew, they understood, and so they understood the principles of fighting and why they didn't want to be oppressed and liberty and all of that. And they did organize. They did organize. They organized enough to actually have a war and get an army going. And it was farmers and it was shopkeepers. Those were the people that went out to fight and actually, you know, did the battling. And so I guess they organized before our current American organizers are trying to organize. And they did win an impossible battle. So that's a very good word from you, Kyle. Thank you. His article, again, is called The Fight the Radical Left Wants. And I think you could just Google it and probably find it. Kyle Scheidler, S-C-H-E-I-D-L-E-R. And Kyle, are you discouraged or encouraged?
Well, to be honest with you, Sandy, I spend a lot of time looking at bad guys and what they're up to and what they want to do. It's hard to be an optimist in that situation. But on the other hand, you know, there's a lot of good people in the United States, and I think we've seen that the majority of the American people do not want to go down this road, and they're just looking for some quality leadership to help them understand how they can go in a different direction.
Yeah.
So I think that would be encouraging.
I do too, but I also say that it's not enough to expect President Trump to be the muscle and to be the bold one. I think each of us needs to take on our part, find out what we can do to continue to fight this. And because they'll never stop. They will never stop. They work 24/7, as you can attest to, Kyle. And I think they don't have families. They think this life is all there is, and they just do amazing things, really. They are to be admired for their diligence. So we're fighting a hard team, but I know we can do it. I know we can put them down. I meant now, not like a dog. I mean, put down the organization that they're doing. I have to be careful, you know. But Kyle, it's great. It's great to talk to you. And say thank you so much for joining me to discuss this and bringing us your insights. I appreciate it so much.
My pleasure.
All right. Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Did you know that since Roe versus Wade was passed, and that was back in 1973, over 66 million babies have been aborted in the United States? That's nearly one in five pregnancies terminated. With the abortion pill now available at local pharmacies and through the mail, a woman's bathroom now has become the scene of the crime, and that's where she tragically expels her child. We have to stop this, and you know how to do that. Preborn is a master at saving these babies and their moms. Go to preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. That's preborn.com/Sandy.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio. The heated confrontation outside an ICE detention facility in New Jersey this month was captured on body cameras. You can see Democratic Congresswoman LaMonica McIver there in the red jacket in a scuffle with ICE agents. Tonight, the Justice Department has charged her with assault.
She was shoving federal agents. She was out of control. The days of that crap are over in this country. We're going to have law and order.
But the congresswoman says she did nothing wrong and is accusing federal agents of escalating the situation.
It's political intimidation, and I'm looking forward to my day in court.
According to the criminal complaint, McIver hit officers while trying to stop them from arresting Newark Mayor Ross Baraka for trespassing. Today, charges against Baraka were dropped. The complaint includes photos of what looks like McIver's forearm making contact with an officer's back.
And you certainly can't put hands on an officer or employee.
The Justice Department did not follow its standard practice of consulting its public integrity section before charging her, according to a source familiar with the matter.
Oh, yeah, poor LaMonica. If you've seen that video, she's the black congresswoman in a red suit, and she's like barrel-chested. He didn't mention that her torso was used to push the officer, sort of like banging him. It really was pretty dreadful, and that happened in Newark, New Jersey. You probably will recall they were rushing an ICE facility. ICE was in the process of arresting someone or someones, And so this is a disgraceful act. And also, Congresswoman MacGyver is on the Homeland Security Committee. And thanks to Mike Johnson, she's still on it. You know, congresspersons should have some dignity, and they should not be breaking the law. That's not okay. In fact, the Justice Department has charged her with, I'm not sure the exact charges, but she has been charged, and she's going to have a trial. So thank goodness for that, because we have to draw a line in the sand. We know we've got Ilhan Omar. We've got all of these radical left females in the Congress who don't give a whit about our law, about American culture. And they are part of that radical left. So we have them in the Congress. We have them in media. I mean, they really are everywhere, and they do wield a lot of power. But I just don't think, I believe we have to fight back wisely. Just like as I referred to the founders, they surely knew oppression, and they surely knew how to fight. We have to fight. We can't be Pollyanna about it. But in the light of eternity and God's work among his people, you know, they're not going to win in the end. They're just not. They might win some battles in this country. They might eventually, by the time some of us are no longer on this earth, they might have their way here. But there is a greater judge than the judges we have here. I want to show you just one other thing, that there is a October the 18th is what they're calling No King's Day. It's the first No King's Day. And this was sponsored by Indivisible. That's a voice from the past. I believe they formulated during the Ferguson riots in 2014. But Indivisible is advertising this, and they say the first No King's Day was one of the largest days of peaceful protest in the U.S. history. Millions of people turned out to thousands of cities and towns across the country. Together, we showed Trump that his authoritarian power grabs wouldn't go unanswered. And in a moment when so many people felt alone, we reminded them there are millions of us banding together to save our democracy. You don't have a democracy. You probably ought to change that, but people think that we do. And, you know, we're not very smart people right now. But it goes on. But our work isn't done. Trump is doubling down, building a secret police force. Oh, I hope so. Sending the military into our streets, trying to rig the midterms, and defying Congress and the courts. Okay, if you say so. On October the 18th, we're showing up in more cities and in large numbers to remind Trump, his cronies, and those on the sidelines looking for hope. America has no kings. Here's how you can join the fight. And then they give a map all over the country and all kinds of stuff. In some of these places, they offer child care while you go for this training. They are very organized, as Kyle said. But we can be more diligent, we can be smarter, because we, most of us listening to me, we have a God who's the source and fount of all wisdom. And so we need to pray and then act, figure out what part we can play in this. Well, I hope you enjoyed this discussion with Kyle. I certainly did, and I hope you learned something. It's important that we be knowledgeable and not just passive about the things that are transpiring in our country. Well, I want to thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.